Korea leads the world in autos and electronics, but the country's share of the global market is now facing challenges from protectionism and growing competition from newly emerging exporters. As an export-dependent economy, there is an onus on South Korea to cultivate new, innovative industries where the country can rise to the top. There are hints that cosmetics may play a role in Korea continuing to punch above its weight as an exporting powerhouse. In this second episode of our three-part series with honorees from Korean American Day, KAI sat down with pioneers who played a pivotal role in introducing Korean cosmetic products to the United States. If you missed our first episode with Susan Kang, founder of the cultural trendsetting website Soompi, we highly recommend you go back and listen. From the Korea Economic Institute in Washington, D.C., I'm your host, Yong Kwon, and you're listening to Korean Context. We have in the studio today Charlotte and Dave Cho, founders of SokoGlam, the preeminent online destination for Korean skincare products. Their business was featured on the New York Times, Vogue, Allure, Marie Claire, Vanity Fair, Forbes, Business Insider, CNN, Bloomberg, and others. In addition, Ms. Cho is also the author of The Little Book of Skincare. They are also honorees at this year's Korea American Day celebrations. Congratulations again, and thank you for being with us in the studio today.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. We're so honored.
Both of you grew up in the United States, right? Mm-hmm. And you guys spent your formative childhoods in the United States. When did you first interact with K-beauty? When did that first happen?
For me, I was born in California, and when I went to Korea to live and work for the first time, it was in 2008. That's when I became aware of Korean skincare products, and that's when I first tested those and used them. I also learned a lot about how to take care of my skin during that time through my Korean colleagues. That's when I became aware of how magical and how innovative these products were and how effective they were.
And what about you, Dave? I mean, did you learn it through Charlotte, or was it in the dorm rooms of West Point? Where did you first interact with K-beauty products?
I was born in Korea, but I came over when I was like two. I would say that for me, I first got introduced to, I didn't know it then, but Korean beauty or beauty mindset through my mom. So at a young age, she made sure that I was cleaning my face, not with hand soap, right, but with facial soap. Soap that's meant for your face. My mom was using, you know, Korean products at that time. And so the biggest thing that I always remember that stuck with me is to wash my face and to also put on sunscreen, whether it was sunny outside or it was not sunny outside. And to me, because I learned it at such a young age, it was just normal to me. I didn't have to learn how to apply sunscreen. I know today there's even some of my friends beyond mid-30s now, and they still don't like to wear sunscreen because the association is only with activity or sports or at the beach, and they don't like the smell and it's all thick and oily. But there's so many great sunscreens out there, obviously. But for me, it became very natural. I thought that was really weird when my friends were saying that. I thought just everyone just knew how to use these products. Obviously, when I met Charlotte and I got stationed in Korea is where I met Charlotte. And that's where I really got to know full circle what was happening, what my mom introduced to me at a young age, but what I kind of got reacquainted with in Korea with Charlotte, and just seeing that passion kind of flow through her. And that was really kind of eye-opening.
I think both of you described a very typical Korean-American experience. I mean, one person going back to Korea and learning about, you know, K-beauty or other aspects of Korean culture, one side learning from their parents. Those are very quintessential Korean-American experiences.
Yep.
But not everybody jumps into the K-beauty business on top of that. So what led you to go jump into that business?
After living in Korea for 5 years, I was at Samsung. Dave was stationed in Yongsan, and he was in the military. We met there, and we got married. Then there was this point in time when Dave decided that he was going to leave the military and go to grad school in the U.S. And so at that time, we had gone back and forth to California for a few holidays, and all of our friends would ask us for these products that I was raving about, and they couldn't get their hands on it because they were based in the U.S. So we would just pack our suitcases filled with Korean beauty products and bring them. I felt like Santa Claus, basically, bring them and hand them out and tell them how to use it. And they had a million questions because it's quite complicated, and they didn't have any information over there. Yeah, that's where the idea sparked. for me, I was so excited to share even more and kind of an official capacity, just want to talk about it and almost inspire people to take care of their skin, because I saw my skin transform and I knew the impact it could have on your confidence and how empowered you could feel when you learn about how to take care of your skin. So from that passion, Dave and I decided to start SilkaGlam, and that was in 2012.
I'll just add that, you know, for me, I didn't really necessarily wanted to be an entrepreneur. Like, it wasn't really what I wanted to do. I know I wanted to go to West Point and serve this country when I was a sophomore in high school. And I was lucky enough to get in, and I was committed to serve this country in the military for over 20 years. I was just, like, really loving what I was doing. It was really, truly, for SilkaGlam, it was really a kind of this passion project. I wanted to go back to West Point and teach finance and economics, but obviously I didn't take that path because it was a passion project of ours, and we kind of just wanted to share these things with the rest of the world and whoever was willing to listen. Truly just kind of a passion thing, because we both had full-time jobs. But it was exhilarating. It was that first order that came in. The first order that came in was one of Charlotte's friends. I'll never forget it. And it was so exciting. And then we had an order come in from a complete stranger. And that just changed the game for us. We popped the bottle. I think it was a soju bottle. It was just so exciting. And I think, like, just one thing led to another, where it was like passion project to, hey, this might be a great maybe stay-at-home job for one of us. Like, maybe we should start pursuing that, take some risk, you know, maybe, to, wow, this is a big thing, and this is really changing people's lives. And so passion just kind of grew much bigger and bigger and bigger. And so we didn't want this to be a big business. It was really about how can we share this with more and more people, because it is really helping people in their daily lives.
I think this is the best story of accidental entrepreneurship that exists out there. Before we get further into the conversation, define what K-beauty means. I mean, what is K-beauty? How do you define K-beauty?
It's a great question, because a lot of people, it gets muddied as people try to define it. And for me, K-beauty is a product that was made and sold in Korea. And so for us at SilkaGlam, we curate K-beauty products. So these products are sold in Korea, they're sold to Korean people, and we curate the best of those and bring them to the U.S. A lot of people may say that they are K-beauty, but they're only made in Korea, but they are made for the U.S. market. I wouldn't consider that K-beauty, because truth be told, a lot of these beauty products that are made by Western brands, they make their products in Korea. So would they be considered K-beauty just because they're made in Korea? No, because these products were made for the U.S. market and for U.S. consumers, never for Korean people.
K-beauty is a very new term as well. Korean products, and you mentioned that there are international cosmetic companies that produce their products in Korea. But Korean cosmetics as a brand has been a very new phenomenon in the global market, and it's competing in a very competitive market. I mean,
yep.
Of course, there's American brands that exist that's very familiar to American audiences. And internationally, there is companies like L'Oreal from France, there's Shiseido from Japan, who, I mean, these are 100-plus-year-old companies that have an established consumer base in the United States and are known to also the emerging market because of their ubiquitous presence in international airports. So how is it? I mean, what happened? What catalyzed the sudden growth in K-beauty products in the last 5-10 years? Is it you guys? Is it SilkaGlam?
No, I don't think we can take all the credit. For us, we're just happy to be a part of that story. You know, one quick funny story is when Charlotte came from PR, you know, at Samsung. And so in 2012, she understood that, you know, in order to actually get K-beauty out there so people could understand it, because she understood they needed to be educated. The consumers didn't know enough about how to take care of their skin at that time. And so she would call up and email these beauty editors in New York and say, hey, I'm Charlotte Cho from SilkaGlam. Love to talk to you about K-beauty. And some of these reporters would actually come back and say, K-beauty? What's K-beauty? Is it Kardashian beauty? Yes. And, you know, it's a joke that we've told before, but it's always so good to remind ourselves how far K-beauty has come, right? And to your point, I mean, it's just grown so much. You know, one thing I think Charlotte was trying to say earlier is that, you know, K-beauty is actually very global. Right, it's not meant for only Korean people, actually. It's meant for, you know, anybody that's willing to listen, because these products are really effective, you know, and there's a little bit of a disruption story there too, because I think that consumers before weren't as savvy. So for example, you know, when, you know, I'll use a different category almost. How do you know what kind of detergent you should buy? Mm-hmm. Well, it's whatever the brands are telling you to buy. right? So Tide is the one that comes to me because I can see the marketing material. I can see the print advertising, the commercials that are being paid. These big brands have the big dollars, and they're going to tell you what you can buy. Not to say it's a bad product at all. We love Tide. But the thing about K-Beauty is that it really came from a product and results-driven kind of story genesis, right, where they didn't necessarily needed to have all the marketing budget to actually get the story out there, tell people what to buy. Actually, they wanted to start a dialogue with the customer and say, like, hey, these products are meant for your skin type, and this can help you with this skin concern, you know. And nobody was really marketing products that way. And so I think what's happened is at the same time K-Beauty really kind of to take an uptick, we saw also a proliferation of social, right, social engagement with Instagram and Facebook mm-hmm. and all of those things. And so customers were getting more savvy, right? They were getting more educated. They're sharing that content more. Beauty editors started to get more excited about it. This whole kind of flywheel started to spin, and I think that it's really kind of pushed. And we're happy and proud to be one of the players to really help do that, you know. But I think it's also with growth of K-food and K-drama and K-pop, all these things kind of push this flywheel faster and faster. And so, you know, I still think there's so much more that can go, right, for all these categories that I mentioned. So we're just really proud to be a part of that story.
And just to add to that, you think about how did K-Beauty make its mark? And it was a little bit of timing, a little bit the fact that they were so innovative. Time and time again, they would be turning out the BB cream, cushion compacts, you know, products with snail mucin infused in them, these unique categories that don't exist anywhere else, and they are producing results, and people were raving about these products, really helped cement them as an innovative cosmetics mecca. And so as a consumer too, these products were accessible in price. So you didn't have to spend $80 to $100 for one product to explore it and to try it and test it. It cost $3, $10, $15. And so this was very palatable for general audiences, and they got really excited to take part in this completely new category. And for me, I remember growing up in California and everything was so expensive, either out of reach at a department store, or it wasn't exciting and it wasn't packaged in a cute way if you found it in the drugstore. So I think Korea really hit the sweet spot in terms of price, innovation, accessibility, and fun. They brought the fun in skincare, and I truly believe that has really changed the industry.
And sorry, one last thing is one interesting thing to your other part of the question, which is all these big players, right? The big global cosmetic players. They also played a part in growing K-Beauty and bringing more awareness to this, because I think that one of the CEOs of those big global companies was asked one time in an interview, you know, what are you going to do about this whole current kind of K-Beauty wave? And he basically said to embrace it. The best way to address it is to embrace it. And I think that what's happened there then is they're making these products in Korea, right? They see that their customers want these products. They're seeing that it's really, really great. And so they want to also adopt some of that innovation and bring that to their product lines, which is really great because it just makes everything work better together and doesn't have to be so competitive. I know it is. But because K-Beauty is synonymous with really great skincare, everyone wants that, whether it means innovation, whether it means customers, whether it means products. Everyone wants a piece of that. And so, you know, it's a really exciting time.
At least from my own memory and childhood experiences, I remember my friends used to be very, to put it delicately, freaked out when they saw Korean face masks. But I think now there isn't a beauty product that's as ubiquitous as Korean face packs that are out there in the market today. Just going back to your when you began Soko Glam, you talked about how your first customer was someone that you knew, and then you had someone who you didn't know make this order. Did you notice in the beginning, was it largely the Asian American community? Was it Korean Americans? What was your consumer base in the beginning, and how has that changed over the past few years?
We had no idea what to expect because, again, it was just a side project. We were just having fun with building our little shop online and taking pictures and uploading them up there. But when we got our first order, we were really excited because it was our friend and she was obviously trying to support us. And when the non-friend ordered from us, we were really shocked because this person wasn't Korean or Asian and we could just tell by the last name. And so we got really excited. I remember the first article that was ever written about our tiny shop back in 2012. 2012, it sold out our store. And granted, at the time, there's only 40 products each, and there's only like 12 products we curated. But we noticed that most of the people, around 70% of the people that had bought from us, were non-Asian. And that was the moment for us where we were like, wow, this is awesome. Even to this day with Soko Glam, 6 years later, 70% non-Asian. And so you can see even from the phenomenon of K-beauty and the people that are ordering and the fact that K-beauty can be found at Bloomingdale's, at Sephora, and all these mainstream marketplaces, it's not a Korean thing. Skin is skin. You will benefit from these products because they have hydrating ingredients, things to help minimize pores. These are products that all people from all backgrounds will love.
And you mentioned social media earlier. Do you think that was the entry for these non-Koreans learning about K-beauty products? Do you have an idea or sense for where they learned it? I mean, is it from other Korean Americans? Is it?
You know, I would attribute a lot of the early awareness to PR. As the intro kind of mentioned, Soko Glam and Charlotte have been published in every single publication you can imagine when it's in beauty. Right, so the Vogues and the Glamour and the, you know, Allures of the world, like everybody, you know. And Charlotte, actually, you might have heard of the 10-step
yes.
Korean skincare routine. Charlotte coined that term, and it wasn't about you didn't have to use 10 steps, but it was a way to change the narrative, change the conversation, kind of spark discussion, even for people to say, I'm not going to use 10 steps. That's a win for us because then it gets them interested to understand what are the steps and then thinking, okay, what should I use for me? And that's really what the 10-step was all about. Charlotte is a board-certified esthetician, and she really wanted to learn more about the science of the skin, right? So she can educate. That's a huge part of our DNA for Soko Glam. We really wanted to make sure it was all about education and not about telling people what to buy. Social, I would say, you know, played a part in it, but to me, PR, because it brought a lot of credibility to this thing called K-beauty at the time. That helped perpetuate and create this flywheel effect like I talked about earlier to get that thing going. And then Instagram and Facebook really, like 2012, 2013, 2014, you know, back when it was like super hot, it really kind of helped the sharing community of K-beauty happen, right? On Reddit, I believe in like 2014-ish, I'm not sure, but there's a subreddit, Asian Beauty, and a lot of the great discussion happening there. And so it's a really strong community that helps talks about all these things. And so it continues to evolve. But I would say in the beginning, it was really a lot of word of mouth. We didn't run any ads. You know, it was all organic. It was just Charlotte sharing. And it was really mostly with people in the press and on our own channel and our own blog, which is The Clog. That was a huge resource for people to understand these techniques. Actually, a lot of these articles that Charlotte would write on The Clog was really the central source for all these other publications, you know, to come and say, oh, can you go deeper on this? Because you maybe would love to write an article about this topic. So it just kind of really had this network effect that just really kind of took off.
Yeah, I think K-beauty was meant to be born digitally. And without Instagram and people wanting to share their routines and talk about how much they love K-beauty, it wouldn't have created this effect. When you think about these time-honored brands like, you know, from L'Oreal and Estée Lauder, they have huge budgets to talk about their products. And then you get one ad, in like a one full-page color ad in a magazine, which will cost you $100,000. K-beauty didn't have that. But thanks to the digital age, you know, you can put something on Instagram and it'll go viral and people will want that product and talk about that product. So even though Korean beauty has tried to come into the U.S. for many, many times, actually, previous to this surge in recent years, there wasn't that digital age that helped propel it. And there wasn't someone to really talk about it in a relatable way. I think that's where I think we came in handy. I think talking about Korean beauty from a Korean-American perspective, someone that understands what an American consumer would want, and then someone that is Korean as well and understands what Korean beauty is all about, I think that really helped bridge the gap.
Beyond K-beauty, we've heard so much of the similar narrative with K-pop, with K-drama as well. For decades, Korean entertainment companies have been trying to penetrate the American market.
Right.
And we've heard very similar things where American studios watching K-pop and K-drama would say, well, that's very interesting, but the Korean-American community in the United States is what?
It's not big enough.
It's not big enough for them to come to the United States, for them to invest in K-drama and K-pop coming here. And that's partly why when Rain came to New York in the early 2000s, it didn't take off into this, like, blossoming Korean wave in the United States. And time and time again, people who are observing K-pop and K-drama have also said it's really the advent of YouTube, of Facebook, and Instagram that really propelled a Korean wave forward in the United States. And it sounds like K-beauty is well within that trend. So perhaps Korean Americans were meant to live in a digital age. And Soko Glam is one of the pioneers of the Korean wave. How do you measure success? Is there anything that you look to as an example of if you reach that status, that's how you define success? Or is there any examples that you use to caution yourself in exploring the American market?
You know, when you think of Danish people and their furniture and how beautiful it is, and everyone knows that the best furniture is made in Denmark. Well, Korean beauty has achieved that status where people just automatically assume Korean beauty to be very high quality, trusted skincare. And so, honestly, I feel that we're getting closer and closer to that, where everyone in the world kind of recognizes that. When they see a Korean skincare product, they go, oh, that's got to be good, because Korean people know how to make their cosmetic products. And that's something where I hope Korean beauty can be cemented as, so that it continues to thrive in that industry. And they don't need to rely on fancy marketing terms or anything like that to stay up there and to be recognized and acknowledged. I want them to be up there, just like how Denmark furniture is up there, and it's been there for so long.
Personally, one of the ways that I define success in what we're doing is to shake the Korean president's hand. It's kind of a half joke, I guess, but it's still definitely a goal of mine, because it really is beyond K-beauty. For me, I've always been very mission-driven, you know, since I was in high school, wanted to be a part of something much bigger than myself. And I take a lot of pride being Korean-American on this mission that we have. And, you know, just really being able to show something that is truly innovative and special coming from Korea. And it's not just a product. It's made by the people, right, by a philosophy about all the history of Korea is going into these products. And I find a lot of passion and pride in sharing, being a part of that journey. And yes, it's K-beauty, but I find a lot of pride in a lot of the K and fill in the blank that is really kind of penetrating the U.S. market. I think it's a great time to be Korean American. And I know that not a lot of Korean Americans, especially the older generations, can say that in America, right? And I find that that's a huge responsibility that we have then, you know, to make it where we can be more proud and maybe even achieve more things as a people together in these communities that we have, not just with Korean Americans, but with many others.
You know, what really resonates with me is your description of K-beauty as incorporating everything that is and was Korea, Korean culture, its traditions. I mean, I remember as a child going to my grandparents' house in rural Korea, and my aunts would talk about, oh, like, cucumbers for this, and then this herb for this, and then even for painting nails, these flowers are perfect. So a lot of the Korean heritage goes into what has transformed to K-beauty today. Simultaneously, South Korea, of course, is today going through a significant social transition. As you know, there's been a big social movement in the past year for there to be greater gender equality, and cosmetics have been at the center of this discussion because there are people that feel that it has played a role in enforcing a more of a patriarchal attitude in Korean society. How do you navigate this conversation?
When it comes to skincare, I think that skincare has become more synonymous to wellness and health. It's not really a vanity thing. It actually is mental, because if you are confident in your skin, you know, you don't feel bogged down with anxiety and worries. So when I think about taking care of your skin and the skin first philosophy that I believe Korean beauty embodies, that's the part I'd like to focus on versus being flawless or having perfect makeup or presenting yourself in a way that male counterparts will be satisfied with. I like to think about it as self-care and wellness rather than that side.
Perhaps in conclusion, and you touched upon this a little bit, but how has this whole experience with Soko Glam made you feel about being Korean-American? And how has it changed your views towards the Korean-American community?
So I don't remember Korea that well because, you know, I was like a baby when I came over. And I grew up in California for the most part. And I didn't get reconnected with Korea until I was in the service. So I was stationed there. That was basically my mid-20s. So it's like a long gap. And so the short end of it is, for me, I really struggled being Korean-American growing up. I remember being made fun of. And, you know, I think I share this story with a lot of people around my age where, you know, you didn't know how to identify yourself. Are you Korean or am I American, right? And it's always like, even on a weekly basis, it's like you're one day Korean and one day you're American. And you grow up, and I remember, like, my parents saying, whatever you do, just try to fit in and don't try to stick out too much. That was kind of telling me, well, you need to be like the people that are around you. And a lot of them were, you know, Caucasian. And so I had to find a way to find my identity. When I was stationed in Korea, I met with one of my extended family members. And he asked me, do you identify yourself as U.S. military or Korean? You know, like, how do you see yourself? And I said, well, I'm in the U.S. military. And he said, you know, your passport might say USA. The patch on your shoulder might be a U.S. flag, but you're also one of us. And, you know, that really stuck with me because I think the story of who I am today as a Korean-American, I'm extremely proud, is I think back to that story and I feel a lot of appreciation because I understand that what he meant by saying that is, you know, there really is no correlation, right, for you, Dave, for you to have been this successful. You know, your parents immigrated with basically nothing. I remember growing up rationing food. My parents didn't have a college education. I didn't come from a wealthy part of town. I went to public schools. I didn't get into West Point when I first tried. There was no correlation, but he's like, we are proud of you because you came from our blood. So there's that proudness and appreciation, but there's also this responsibility. There's a really heavy responsibility that I feel, which is I didn't have these role models growing up. So if I can be something here as a Korean American, and even in a really small way to say, you can be an entrepreneur, right? You can be a CEO, right, of a decently successful company, maybe even a really big company one day. You can be all these things. You can be a community leader. You know, you can be somebody on a podcast, right? Like something, anything. Being Korean American today, I'm extremely proud. I'm really appreciative of everyone, my parents, my grandparents that made sacrifices, people in my community that make sacrifices still today that have lifted me up to where I am today, that got me here. It is now my responsibility to move that baton forward and try to make it the best it can be, you know? And so, you know, that's how I identify myself as Korean American today. I'm extremely passionate about that topic, and I hope I shake the president's hand one day.
For me, I would say that as a Korean American, I'm very proud and honored to just be part of this movement, and I'm so happy that my parents, who had sacrificed so much to be in the U.S., and, you know, my dad owns a liquor store, and, you know, they had to leave really great opportunities in Korea to, you know, find a new path in life in America, and I feel that I want to do whatever it takes to make them proud and also support what they dreamed of for me. And so I am very, very empathetic to what sacrifices they made. In some ways, I feel like they left behind an amazing country to live in the U.S. Not that the U.S. is a bad place to be, but it's home. They left home. And I, as I get older, and because I spent 5 years in Korea, I realize what they had sacrificed. And I want to make sure that I do whatever I can to make them proud. And then on the other side, because I lived in Korea, and I got to understand the Korean people and how hard they work and how creative they can be and how amazing they can be, I also want to give them some encouragement and hope, because they are true innovators and they have made so many advances in so many different industries after coming out of, you know, third world country status. They were taken advantage of as a country for so long. They're so small. They have no natural resources. They have so many disadvantages, yet they are able to come out of each hurdle and challenge stronger. And I want to support their growth, and I want to see Korea succeed in many ways. And it kind of breaks my heart that the economy is not doing so well, and the youth in Korea is struggling, and they feel a little suffocated. There's a lot of disadvantages they can have right now. And so my hope and my, I feel like my responsibility is to make sure Korean beauty is as successful as it can be so that people in Korea can be successful. I tell this to Dave and other people all the time that whenever I go to Korea, I tell them how popular K-beauty is worldwide and how people look up to their style and their food, and they're always so shocked and they're always so amazed. And that makes me sad that they don't understand and even digest and recognize that. They're like, what? But we like what American people are wearing, or we like the trends that are coming out of America. But No, it's reverse. You know, people, you guys have done so much in so many different industries that you should be proud of. And I'd love for them to recognize that more.
That's it for the episode today. Many thanks to Charlotte and Dave Cho, and to you listeners for tuning in. Charlotte's book is titled The Little Book of Skincare, Korean Beauty Secrets for Healthy Glowing Skin. It's published from William Morrow and available on Amazon and elsewhere. Next week, we will meet our final Korean American Day honoree, who helped bring the very first Korean cultural products to the United States in the early 1990s. See you then!